Welcome to Todd and Preston's Drive Time Chat. The car ride is imaginary, but the conversation is real.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our vehicle. It is a lovely Falcon Cuckoo Thunderbird. I am currently in the driver's seat. My name is Preston. If you will all please sit back, relax, and don't say anything, I can get you to where we're going. And if you have any kind of suggestions, you know, advice or backseat driving, please direct them to my co-pilot, Todd. Todd, is there anything you'd like to say to our people?
Just hi. How's everyone doing? It's good to be here. And yeah, I'm so often the driver. It's kind of nice to be in the passenger seat for a change.
Yes, fans. And since both Todd and I are coming back from vacation, I want to give a quick little shout out to everyone on Hilton Head Island, Monica, Rufus, The Vine, everyone down at the Mellow Mushroom. All of you, wonderful time, Mom and Dad, and of course, my partner in crime, Mr. Fahim Hanna. Thank you once again for joining us. Yes, we're both coming back from vacation. I'm coming back from Hilton Head Island, as I just said, and Todd is returning from his yearly excursion to Dragon Con. Todd, what did you learn this year at Dragon Con?
That I am not quite as interested in the personal lives of actors as I might have ever imagined. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I mean, if it was one of those panels where it's just like the guy goes on and on about their life instead of talking about the show, which is why you're there, then yeah, I can see where that would be a problem.
Yeah, because of the strikes that are going on right now, they couldn't talk about the shows. Every once in a while, they would make a mild reference, like something changed between season two and season one, or they would mention the name of the show. But a lot of them would not go much beyond that. There were no anecdotes about, you know, crazy days on set, or allowing the audience to ask questions like, if you could swap characters for one day, whose character would you swap with? You know, there was nothing like that. No questions or discussions about favorite episodes. And so, yeah, it was some of the questions were literally things like, how do you take your coffee? What is your favorite dessert? What is your favorite color? And now some panels were better than others. Some of the questions were better than others. Sometimes the actors got kind of creative and answered the questions in inventive ways and went off on tangents. But yeah, so there were a few moments where it was, yeah, I think at one panel it was, what did you have for breakfast this morning?
Wow.
Yeah.
Oof. So, yeah, we can clearly see the effects of the writer's strike on Todd's favorite event of the year, his kind of yearly beach trip into the paradise of geekdom, nerddom, and all things niche. There we go. That's the word. So did you still have fun, though?
I definitely did. The good thing about Dragon Con, at least for me, is there's not such a thing as a bad year of Dragon Con. I could probably consider two particular years maybe just slightly less good than other years, but all years that I've been at Dragon Con since 2012 have been good or better, even 2020 when we had the pandemic, because that year we weren't there in person. It was done virtually. But even that year was good, even sitting here in my recliners and kind of going to panels virtually via the internet, even that was a good year. I would say this year, maybe a little bit lackluster, mostly because last year the guest list was a little bit lackluster, but I didn't care quite as much because I already was starting to realize I need to go to other things other than just actor panels. And also last year, Dave and Andrew went. So that also made last year really good and really different. This year, I was back on my own, and the guest list was really good this year compared to last year. The problem is that despite it being a good guest list, like I said, nobody could talk about their shows. So for the first time in a while, there were a couple actors there from Babylon 5, but there were supposed to be three. One had to cancel because he got COVID. Also, we had some guests from the Orville. That was really good. The problem is one of them had to cancel. And again, they couldn't talk about their show. Then there were several guests from Eureka, which is weird because that show has been off the air for several years, but several of them were there. And I'm trying to think if they had a cancellation or not. I think maybe everybody who was supposed to be there for Eureka maybe was there.
That's confirmed.
But yeah, it was like this great guest list, and then nobody could talk about their shows. So I would say that this year was a little bit weird and maybe not one of the better years. But again, no year of Dragon Con is bad.
Well, wonderful. Did you say you ventured out into new territory? Tell us more about that.
Well, maybe a little bit. I did try to go to some fan panels. In fact, I think there was one time slot where originally I was going to go to some actor panels. And I was just like, you know, I'm not quite in the mood for the questions about, you know, favorite coffee and breakfast and everything. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go to something different. And there was some kind of panel that had something to do with the Muppets. I think it was just kind of like not a life-changing panel, but just like a fun panel of saying, if these two Muppets were in a fight, who would win? And unfortunately, that particular fan panel was filled up. So I ended up going to something else. And so it was kind of like a third choice, and it wasn't quite as good, but it was still pretty good. It was about the Amber Chronicles. And so it was basically just some people who were kind of experts on the book talking about those particular books, which Dave Shutt and I have both read a long time ago in high school. And I think he might have I know I've reread them at least once, and he might have reread them more than that. Also, there was something I've been going to the last couple years, which is a trivia panel on Marvel and DC comics, and includes the comics and the movies, TV shows, a little bit of everything. And there's audience participation. I'm not much of an audience participation person, so I was content to just kind of go and just listen to others answer trivia questions. But that's kind of a fun event. Starship Smackdown, which is kind of similar to what they did with the Muppets, where it's a thing that I think usually takes place on Thursday nights. And I've been to it. I think this is probably the third year I've been to it, where they basically just ask for suggestions from the audience on people's favorite starships. And then they put them on a board and they kind of put it on like a tournament type board. And so then some panelists up front vote on which starship beats which, and it gradually gets whittled down to, you know, the final two and then an eventual winner. And then I think I went to one or two writer panels, one or two role-playing panels. Then there is the Blood Feud, which is a kind of Family Feud style game where two or three groups from podcasts that do live D&D play podcasts, they are pitted up against each other in a Family Feud style game that is all about role-playing topics. And so I went to that. That was probably about my third or fourth year going to that. Another thing that I always try to go to every year, except for one year, and I kind of regretted skipping it that one year, is the parade. The parade is something that Dragon Con is kind of different at than most other cons that don't do it. Dragon Con is really big for cosplay, but I'm not that much for going around and looking at cosplay and taking a lot of pictures of cosplay. But the great thing about the parade is that that's a lot of people in costume, and so the cosplay comes to you. So, yeah, I'm not sure I answered your question because I'm trying to think of something that was truly new that I didn't do before. And for some reason, it's not coming to mind. But, yeah, I still tried to do a variety of things. So yeah, it was definitely still fun.
Well, great. Great. Did you come home with any cool swag this time?
No. And that's another thing where I'm kind of different from a lot of people. There is a vendor's hall where you can go and buy all kinds of merchandise, whether it be T-shirts, leather armor, weapons, comic books, novels, dice for role-playing games, coffee mugs, just anything you can think of that is geeky, nerdy, game-related, whatever. And there are some people that put a lot of importance in that, so much so that they are willing to wait in line to get into that particular building. And sometimes the line is pretty long. It's not that the building fills up. It's just that the fire marshal has certain rules as to how many people can be let in at a time. And you know, just so you don't rush the doors and everything. So sometimes people will post to Facebook that the line is backed up around the block or that it takes 30 minutes to get in. I really don't put that much importance on buying merchandise. So I usually leave that till almost dead last on Monday when so many other things are kind of winding down that going and shopping is one of the few things left. Only twice have I ever bought anything. So no, I'm not really big on swag. But there is a group called the Swag and Seek group that it's people who intentionally either buy their own stuff or maybe even make their own crafts. And then they put them in little bags and put a tag on them that say Swag and Seek. And then they will hide them throughout the con. And people can, you know, either find these things by accident or maybe intentionally look for swag. And I was almost tempted to do that one year, but I haven't participated in that yet. And to be honest, I've never found anything. But I am in that particular Facebook group just to kind of keep track of what they're doing. And I know that there are a lot of people who do put a lot more stock in swag, whether it be buying stuff or finding that free swag. They post pictures and they just have like a table full of just tokens of stuff, whether it be little stuffed animals or customized coins or bags of dice or like I said, like arts and crafts type stuff. And some people were posting the kind of swag that they actually hid, and some of it was expensive. Some people go very low cost, and some people don't mind spending quite a bit to put these free gifts out there for people to find. Yeah, I feel bad I'm not answering your questions with a whole lot of positive answers, despite the fact I'm saying I had a lot of fun. But yeah, swag is not exactly my focus either. In fact, to try to steer this around to something positive, so you're not like saying this topic isn't going well, let me emphasize that the great thing about Dragon Con, for one thing, is just 4 or 5 days of not being at work. But then also, in addition to that, it's almost like high school. You know how when you're in high school, you have algebra for a period and then biology for a period and then history for a period. Well, Dragon Con is kind of like that, too. It's like an hour of something and then a half hour in between and then another half hour or something and another half hour in between. And so you go to these little 1 hour things, either an actor panel, a fan panel. Or if you choose not to go to panels, some people don't go to panels at all. They're content to just people watch and look for the swag or look for cosplay. Some people go for parties. Some people go for concerts. But whatever you do, it's like an hour of this and another hour of this and another hour of this. And so by the end of the day, you could end up going to something like 8 or 9 events if you're like me and you really love going to those type of things. And you feel like you got a variety of entertainment. So while no one particular thing is like a life-changing event, it's just the sheer variety and consistency and non-stopness of the entertainment that is very fulfilling. You know, by the end of the weekend, you feel like, wow, I actually did a lot. There was one panel I went to that I guess was a little bit different. It was the trial of Benjamin Sisko, because there's one particular episode of Deep Space Nine where the war is going so badly that Sisko has to kind of sacrifice a little bit of his usual utopian Federation ideals in order to just try to help the Federation survive. And so there was one particular panel this year where some of the people on the Trek track actually kind of acted out a trial of Sisko. And the people who were prosecuting did a really good job at it. I think the people who were defending him, they went a little bit the kind of more goofy route, and that wasn't quite as good. But the people who were doing the prosecution, they had their stuff together. They had video evidence. They had really sophisticated arguments. And so I went to that, and that was kind of different. In fact, I would say I went to several things on the Trek track this year that I don't usually go to. And so that was something that was a little bit different. But yeah, the great thing about Dragon Con is such a customizable event, because I do know at least one person, somebody I went to high school with, and when she's gone to Dragon Con a few times, she's never gone to a panel. She prefers going to like an over 40 meetup group and watching cosplay and just wandering around. And there are other people that they love going to just the fan panels, not the big guest panels. And then there are people like me who kind of like doing the variety. So yeah, it is a great con. I don't know if I'm doing the best job selling it, but I swear to you, it's an awesome event for 4.5 days of entertainment.
Sounds great. Sounds like something I need to investigate myself. I used to go to a lot of cons in Virginia and Charlotte, but I haven't been in a while, you know, since the pandemic, really. Mm. Like, maybe I need to drag the old con going hat back out and take a venture sometime.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just so it's not me rambling all day about this one topic, I was wondering, since I had that one challenge of the actors, you know, having to talk about their personal stuff, I'm kind of wondering how that would affect your experience at a con. Would you, like, are you the type of person where you may not go to these actors' panels in the first place, or would you like to go, but maybe this year you wouldn't be interested in them talking about just their personal lives, or would you actually find that kind of refreshing that they were talking about something other than their shows, which might be kind of talked about over and over again already?
More recently, there was a con in Chicago, and I forget the name of it, but a friend of mine who is a professional wrestler, he was there hosting a question and answer session for a very famous Japanese wrestler who, you know, we both admire, and the internet wrestling community in general admires, named Toshiaki Kawada. So I feel like that would definitely be something I would be front and center at. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things where that is so specific to my particular niche. It would have to be something like, come see, you know, Brendan Small talk about Metalocalypse, or, you know, come see Dan Castellaneta come and talk about, you know, all of the things that aren't Homer Simpson. I feel like I would still go do that. Like, come see Conan O'Brien spin his ring on a desk. I would do that. Maybe if it was like, come see Maisie Williams just be goofy, I would do that. Or, you know, come see, you know, Amelia Clark be a goofball. I feel like I would do that.
Yeah.
You know, Pedro Pascal, see if you can out laugh cry Pedro Pascal. I feel like that would be fun. That would be something fun to do, but I don't know that they would do it. Like, Pedro is a big name anyway. I feel like I gotta go deep into it, but like, everyone I'm thinking about, I'm worried that I'm gonna say somebody and you're gonna be like, oh, they're dead. Because, like, okay. So one of my favorite memories at cons, Kevin Conroy used to do everything, right? Mm-hmm. If you had the booking fee for him and he could make it, he would be there. And one of the greatest things about Kevin Conroy was he would stand up on top of his table and scream out, "I am vengeance. I am the knight. I am Batman." And it would sound just like the show. And all of us would cheer. We'd throw little Batman figures up in the air, and then, you know, we'd get him to sign something or just give him $20 just from being there, you know?
Yeah.
And, yeah, it was great. Yeah, I feel like it's something like that that would really draw me. I don't know if I would be like, here's some random guy, you know, from the Twilight Zone reboot. He was in one episode. Don't you want to go see him? Yeah, maybe. Or, you know, here's the cast of Grimm, but they can't really do anything, so we're going to play Mad Libs. That might be interesting, but if it's just cast of Grimm talking about their life, I don't know.
Yeah, and the cast of Grimm actually did come to Dragon Con. They kind of staggered out. Like, I think there was one year that the guy that played Hank was there, and I can't remember if it's the same year or a different year, but the actors that played Monroe and, why am I blanking? Adeline. They, I think, were there the same year. And then there was another year where it was five actors there all at one time. Yeah, and that was actually one of the better years, because that was the same year that the cast of Dark Matter was there, too. But one of the things, as you were talking about, you know, the personal life versus talking about the shows, it's kind of weird because some actors are a little bit more low key than you might expect them to be. And so sometimes, even if you love their character on the show, or they're really, you know, exciting on the show, they might be really laid back in a panel. And it's like, oh, this wasn't as interesting as I thought. And then sometimes, even if a show is not one of your favorite shows, the cast can be really good in real life. And that's the way Being Human US was. That was a show that was a little bit in the horror fantasy realm that I did kind of like, but I wouldn't count it as one of my favorite shows. But the four main cast members from that show are to this day some of the best Dragon Con guests. They haven't been there in forever, but the one year that they were there, oh my goodness, they were super energetic. They had something going all the time. They acted things out. They were just really hyper, really interactive. In fact, I got a picture with them on the last day, and I was like, you guys have been really entertaining. And one of them just admitted, we're getting really tired. So it's kind of interesting how there's that kind of dynamic where you don't know what you're going to expect. And so there've been a few times where even if a show is not one of my favorite shows, I've been like, okay, let me go to a panel of them just in case, because who knows, they might be better in real life than they are on the show.
I mean, that's absolutely fair. And I feel like panels are the best when like everyone's just having fun, right? Mm-hmm. One of the best panels I ever saw was Balkan Skull from Power Rangers. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you know who they are or not.
No, I have seen some Power Rangers stuff a long time ago, but those two aren't ringing a bell, because I assume that they are they two of the high school students that were kind of antagonists, or were they more henchmen of one of the bad guys?
So they are the high school bullies in the show. So it was two guys. I think they were in like their mid to late 20s. Mm-hmm. when they get the call to be Power Rangers. And you know, Bulk is just a really big dude. I think he was at his heaviest about 350 pounds, but he's super tall, about 6'4", and Skull's just like a really skinny dude, and they played like the comic relief of the series.
Okay.
Not just one particular season, but the entirety of Power Rangers. If Power Rangers was on the air, there was a Balkan Skull segment in the episode. And they just had so much fun with it. Like, they would dive under the chair and just throw their shoes and throw their pants in the air. They would they went and got pies, like cream pies, and threw them at each other during the panel.
Oh, wow.
And like, they would play, like, Balk and Skull have a very signature song in Power Rangers that they would play to open up the panel and to close the panel. And it was just great. They were such a blast. I hope they're both still alive as I say this.
They are still alive. Paul Schreier II played Farkas Bulkmir and is 53 years old. Jason Andrew Narvi played Eugene Skolovich and is 49 years old.
Yeah, that does sound good. And it is neat when the panelists will do something interactive like that. Like Louis Ferreira, who played Colonel Young on Stargate Universe. There was one year he was there, and that's when they were doing the ice bucket challenges for ALS. And he actually did that on stage. He actually had, there was a pitcher of water up there, and it was just there to drink, and he actually dumped it on his head. And he was like, I'm actually getting a little bit cold now. And somebody had some kind of space blanket in the audience, and they took it up to him. So he had to wrap himself in that. So yeah, it's really neat when they get involved. And then I think he wore some kind of weird costume in the Hall of Fame. I'm not even sure what it was. It almost looked like a Power Rangers outfit in a way. And so I have a picture of myself with him in that. And there was another year that Ernie Hudson from Ghostbusters was there, and he was dressed in a Ghostbusters uniform. And I was like, that's really cool that you would do that. And he said, man, when you do Dragon Con, you got to do it right. Yeah. And while you were talking, I did think of something different. Maybe not different because I might have done it before, but it's something you might appreciate. In fact, I told you about it while I was at Con. And that is, they do this thing where it's kind of like a lock-in, where the Dragon Con does a charity every year. And the Classics track will do this thing where they'll show a really bad movie and they'll say it's a lock-in. You can't leave without giving a donation to the charity. And they don't actually enforce it. But it's just kind of one of those, you know, please give type of things. And so if you don't make it all the way through, you're supposed to donate. But even if you do, most people donate anyway, you know, just throwing a few dollars in the bucket. But what they showed was, and I'm actually blanking on the name of it, not Nuki, but the other weird alien thing that's kind of like an ET knockoff. Mac and me?
Yeah.
And I missed the first few minutes of it. It was one of those things where I think I tried to go to a different panel beforehand, and either it wasn't that good, or I couldn't get in, or I can't remember what it was, or maybe I took a break or something, but I ended up going late, but not as late as I thought. I thought I would be there about halfway through, but I think it was the scene where the aliens were escaping from the scientist. And so I think it was still pretty close to the beginning of the movie. So I was like, okay, well, let me check this out. And it was definitely a bad movie, and I'm the type of person, I'm not usually into bad movies, but it was also just intriguing enough. And I was also just alert enough. Sometimes I'm kind of drowsy that late at night, but I was actually awake enough to make it through. And yeah, that is a weird, not great, yet at the same time, kind of intriguing movie.
It is so weird, right? Like you've seen the entirety of it. Like I didn't even realize that all that violence was on the Japanese cut. Apparently the action video in Kernersville, little mom and pop store, got like some really weird tapes back in the day, which I think was the beauty of those old video stores, you know, just like the random things you would come across. But yeah, man, that is such a weird piece of cinema, such a weird like moment in the history of culture and in corporate America. And yeah, I don't know, man. We'll have to do a whole thing about that one day. Maybe if we can convince Andrew and Dave to be like, hey guys, let's watch this terrible E.T. ripoff.
Yeah, that might be interesting. I wouldn't mind getting their perspective on it. And it is one of those movies that is bad, but has, I don't know if I would call it redeeming qualities, but just enough interesting material to where even if we all agree it's terrible, I think we could still find interesting things to say about it. And just to clarify what you were talking about with the Japanese cut, the guy that was showing it there that night at Dragon Con, he said that it was the Japanese cut. And the reason he wanted to show it to us is because there's something that happens kind of sort of two-thirds through the movie that is this accidental act of violence that is kind of life-threatening to a child character. And the Japanese cut apparently doesn't pull any punches. And you see what happens, and you see how much of a close call it is. And there's something else going on in the background that involves an explosion. And supposedly in the American cut, they cut some of that out. And I can't imagine how, because if you cut it out, it looks like there would be this big gaping hole in the narrative. It's like, wait a minute, what is going on right now? And why is it happening? And why is it happening this way? But yeah, apparently it was sanitized a little bit for American audiences, but they went full core with it in the Japanese version. And it sounds like whatever copy you got was apparently a Japanese version of it too, because when I sent you that message while I was there, you knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, like, so I just remember it so vividly because, yeah, they try to kill this disabled kid like three or four times.
And the first time was kind of shocking because I think you had warned me about it. And the first time one of them happened, like, holy crap. Yeah, you're not kidding.
No, like he gets thrown off of this gigantic gulch or like cliff or something and falls down onto the bottom of the riverbank. And then we get the scene where he's attached to the car and he's riding around just holding on to this rope. Then he gets launched into a McDonald's, which is the largest McDonald's in the history of the universe. And there's a dance party.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a legitimate, you know, like breakdance party. And Ronald McDonald is there at the largest McDonald's in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, you know, and then we get the scene at the grocery store where it's like, oh my God, they're going to shoot the alien. No, they shoot the kid. Yeah. The Walmart explodes.
Yeah, yeah. That was shocking.
It's insane, right?
Yeah. And that makes it a good movie to watch at a con because you get those reactions from the audience. Even I kind of had a reaction because I was so shocked by it. So, yeah, that's one of those things that, yeah, it's fun to watch with a group. But we've been going on for over 30 minutes on one topic. So should we move on to something else?
I feel like, you know, since I'm the driver, we should probably move on, you know, to our next stop in the road, which is things that I watched during my vacation. It was a vacation at Hilton Head Island, which is a great place to go and visit. It's an island shaped like a tennis shoe. My friend Fahim said that if he was running Sneaker Con, that was where he would have Sneaker Con every year, because it's literally an island shaped like a shoe. But we were kind of hanging out, and you know, there were a few work related things to do. But after that, we just kind of hung out, played Nintendo. We watched a lot of old cartoons, like Futurama, which we watched the new season, most of the new season of Futurama, which is pretty decent. You know, the writing's still pretty solid. The animation has gotten better. Yes, the character voices are a little older, but that's neither here nor there. It's still Futurama. It's still fun. It's still completely wacky. You piece it together however you want to. It's lovely time. Now, this is where we get to the two movies that I saw while I was there, and where I get to tell you about one of my favorite theaters in the whole world, which is the Park Plaza Cinema on Hilton Head Island. Now, okay. Park Plaza Cinema on Hilton Head Island is a very small theater. It only has five screening rooms, and so they only show like five movies. Mm-hmm. You know, being September and in the middle of a writer's strike, you know, this isn't exactly, you know, prime Avengers, you know, Marvel, DC, superhero movie things. But they did release over the past little time this little Agatha Christie send-up for her birthday. They released it on her birthday, which is A Haunting in Venice, a Hercule Poirot story. And if you don't know who Hercule Poirot is, he's basically the archetype upon which all kind of very persnickety, very particular, you know, germophobic, very much kind of like, if you have a debilitating disorder that keeps you, you know, weird and quirky, it all funnels back to Hercule Poirot and his very sensitive stomach and the little gray cells. Yes. Okay. But The Haunting in Venice was a kind of send up to the old spooky kind of haunted house mysteries that Agatha would write. And this one in particular, to go into spoilers, Todd, don't forget to put the spoiler in it.
Spoilers.
This one is about a actress who is in the twilight of her career, and her daughter has died tragically in this old orphanage that the actress owns. And after her daughter died tragically, she shut herself up in it, and she only hosts this Halloween party for all the children in Venice to come to this orphanage and have a spooky puppet show with shadows on the wall and everything. But this time, she has contacted a medium from the United States who is over in Venice with her two Hungarian assistants, and they're going to stage a seance and speak to the tragically departed. And it is in this seance that it is discovered that the ghost accuses someone at the seance of murder. Now, of course, Hercule Poirot is a man of science. He is a man of logic and reason. He does not believe in any of this hocus-pocus, mumbo-jumbo, you know, voodoo-hoodoo nonsense. That is, until the medium herself is flung from the ceiling and impaled right in front of him, and Ooh. A ghostly apparition pushes him into the cauldron with the apples for bobbing, and tries to drown him. And then as he slowly starts to solve the murder, he himself starts seeing vision of a little blonde girl that's helping him solve this mystery. A Haunting in Venice. If you can catch it on a good day, our tickets were only like $5. It's a great time.
Okay. All right. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah. And then, of course, I have to mention one of the greatest shows in my personal opinion in television history is a cartoon by the name of The Venture Brothers. And The Venture Brothers was unceremoniously and rudely canceled in 2020. But now they're back 3 years later with their own feature film, Thus Beats the Baboon Heart.
Are you sure it's not called Radiant is the Blood of the Baboon Heart?
Okay. And it picks up right from season 7. There are mysteries that are hinted at and solved, they say. There are more pathos given to all of the characters. Conflicts are resolved. Conflicts are continued. And of course, there is so much failure in this movie. But it all works. It's all wonderful. If you're a Venture Brothers fan, I don't really want to go into too much about it because I don't know where you are in the series or even if you are paying attention to the series at all. I just want to say, find the Venture Brothers. It's on Hulu and HBO Max. Start from season 1 and go all the way to the movie. Have a great time. Write me your thanks later on. And just remember, everything will be all right, just not in the way that you think it's going to be.
Okay. All right. That's and cryptic. So is the show still on and the movie is just in addition to it? Or is the show ended and this was kind of like a continuation?
No one's sure.
Okay.
It's one of those things where so the entirety of production of The Venture Brothers, it comes down to its two creators, Jackson Publick and Doc Hammer. They write, direct, and voice most of the main cast. Mm-hmm. Like Patrick Warburton is on as Brock Sampson, and they have other guest stars such as Clancy Brown as Red Death, and various other big name stars. But it all comes down to those two and their writing. As it stands right now, this is the stand-in for season 8.
Okay.
But I'm hoping that they'll do a little bit more. Hopefully, Doc is recovered from his illness. And through that, they're willing to continue the show because the movie does end with no resolution to the overarching main plot line and room for continuation, I should say.
Right.
So I'm hopeful that it continues.
Yeah, it would be nice. So I assume it's similar to the situation with the Orville where it's neither canceled nor renewed. It's just in limbo, right?
It's a valuable property that the overlords at the studios do not want to give up. So it will continue to be in the halls of limbo, like everything else that, I love, like Kolchak the Night Stalker and various other things. So, maybe we'll see more of it. Maybe this was the final bow for all of these characters and the story, but The Venture Brothers is nothing if not a statement on recovering from failure and pressing on despite your shortcomings. And I feel like it would be a shame to walk away without taking one last stab at the Monarch versus Dr. Venture.
Yeah, I hope for you and other fans that it's not canceled because from what you said, it sounds like it's either a cliffhanger or at least a vague ending. So yeah, I hope you get at least some closure on that, if not several seasons to come. And I don't know anything about the show. All I know is that when you brought it up, it kind of reminded me that there were at least a couple women at Dragon Con who posted on Facebook that they were dressed as Dr. Mrs. the Monarch. And I don't know anything about that character or why that's such a weird name.
Okay. So Dr. Mrs. the Monarch started out her character as Dr. Girlfriend. She's the girlfriend of the Monarch, the main antagonist of the show.
Okay.
Throughout the series, one of the main plot lines is, can the Monarch and Dr. Girlfriend make their relationship work despite all of the shortcomings that the Monarch has and his hangups and obsession with Dr. Venture, this failed child of a once great man who's now long past and really a man that hasn't done anything in years, 16 years or so. I think at this point, the boys are like 19. So 19 years since Dr. Venture has really done anything with his life. But the Monarch is obsessed, focused with destroying Dr. Venture. And yet Dr. Girlfriend is very smart. She's highly skilled in science. She's highly skilled in like craftsmanship and making all these things. And so she gets attention from the Guild of Calamitous Intent, which is the overarching organization for all the villains of the series. Yes, this show goes deep, very deep.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a very involved mythology around the show.
Oh, it's about as deep as Star Trek. So the Guild of Calamitous Intent has Dr. Mrs. the Monarch as their current leader. But I get ahead of myself. They got married, the Monarch and Dr. Girlfriend. And that's how she became Dr. Mrs. the Monarch.
Okay.
I'd be very interested to know which iteration of Dr. Mrs. the Monarch they were cosplaying as, if it's her current outfit or if it's the season 3 through 4 outfit, or if it's just the Dr. Girlfriend outfit, which is just the Jackie O dress.
It was the cleavage outfit, if that narrows anything.
Yes. That's the season 3 through 5. Okay. Dr. Mrs. the Monarch, where she's not quite the head of the Guild of Calamitous Intent in her full Betty Page outfit yet, but that is quite the revealing cosplay, and bravo to them for being able to keep it together, because that thing is defying all laws of gravity in the cartoon, at least.
Yeah, I think I saw one version where, yes, there is the little bit of cleavage, but it was still mostly conservative. And then somebody else who felt a little bit more comfortable and they showed some more. And I don't know if they had to support something with some tape or what. But
yeah, that double-sided tape was putting in work.
Yeah, it was an interesting outfit. Maybe that's why I happened to remember the name.
I mean, I would remember it too, but... You know, I'd be like, oh my God, it's Dr. Mrs. the Monarch. Can I get a picture? Can you call me 23? The Venture Brothers, high recommendation. When we get to the multi-episode arcs and like season arcs, you're going to see the Venture Brothers appear a lot.
Okay.
In my list. And a lot of other Adult Swim shows will appear as well.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So, and you have something for that list then?
Oh, I have plenty.
Okay.
Plenty.
I wasn't,
I get ahead of myself.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if anybody was interested in that list since we haven't got around to it. And Dave said he actually had some stuff for it too, so.
Yes, but I get ahead of myself. Todd, mm-hmm. Tell us about Oppenheimer.
So Dave and I did go and see Oppenheimer on some kind of National Cinema Day or something where all movies were going to be only $4 or $5 at participating theaters. And I wasn't super interested in seeing Oppenheimer. I maybe had a mild curiosity, but I think Dave wanted to go see it. You may have caught a little bit of our review in a previous episode where we were talking about going to see it. And by the time I edited that episode, we had. So Joanna talked a little bit about our experience. I don't want to talk too much about it because it might give away some things. Well, there again, it's about true history, so I don't know how much spoilers would apply here. But it was like a lot of things nowadays in Hollywood, whether it's movies or TV, very well made. No problem with just the sheer quality of things like the acting and the historical sets, costumes, stuff like that. No problem there. But the movie is 3 hours long and it feels 9 hours long. It's really slow. I just can't help but wonder if there was a better way of telling the story and still working in detail, still being true to history, and maybe being a little bit more informative. Other than the length and the pacing, my other main complaint would be that there were several moments where I felt like there were some lines of dialogue that were kind of important, that were really explaining what was going on, that were drowned out by the soundtrack. And I thought maybe it was just the theater that we went to, because that, I think, was the Grand 18 at the north end of Winston-Salem. And I'm all the time having trouble with that theater. I don't like going there either. Their speakers are either too loud or too soft half the time. But no, there were some reviewers online, like Screen Junkies and one or two other reviewers, who actually made fun of the movie themselves for having that problem where the music was too loud. And I don't know why Christopher Nolan chooses to do that, because he's done that before in other movies. It's like, if you're going to all this trouble to have these great performances from your actors and they're giving informative or entertaining dialogue, why then take this music and just blare it like crazy to where you can't tell what people are saying? I don't get it. So sadly, it was not an enjoyable experience, and I was trying to be polite because I know that Dave wanted to see it and he's more the history buff. And frankly, he had some complaints after it too. So might want to wait some time where he's here for himself to kind of, give his own opinion. But it was not quite what either of us were expecting. And I'm sure it's going to get nominated for a lot of Oscars and it might even win some. But you could also tell this was a movie that was trying to win Academy Awards. I mean, it was trying hard. I know sometimes when it comes to performances in movies or TV shows, you sometimes say that actor was really trying. Well, you can tell here that the director and the movie itself and everything about the movie was trying to win awards. And I kind of wish maybe it had toned down that award bait type mentality and just been informative instead. Informative. I don't know if entertaining is the right word, because this was about a very heavy subject of something in real life that could be considered controversial, but still, just make it worth sitting there for 3 hours. Make it not hard to do. And it was hard to do. There were several times where I did look at my watch and a few times where I wanted to, but like I said, I was trying to be polite because I knew Dave wanted to see it, because I was like, maybe he's enjoying this more than me. So just deal with it. But there were a few times where I was like, please let us be 2 hours through this. And we were only 1 hour through this. So, did you have any interest in seeing it, or have you heard anything about it that swayed your decision to see it or not see it, or wait for it to come out on video or whatever?
I'm interested in it. I feel like it's one of those historical dramas people got sold on because they thought it was going to be like a Nolan kind of action ticking clock movie about the Manhattan Project. And then it ends up being you get a little bit of that, but then it's more about the McCarthyism and like Oppenheimer's personal life. Mm-hmm. And, it delves deep into the issue of McCarthyism, because that's kind of a weird parallel to where we are today a little bit politically in some mm-hmm. respects. But no, I am interested in seeing it. I mean, the June Siskel and Roger Ebert of our time, Red Letter Media, gave it a positive review.
Yeah, I noticed that.
And so like I'm interested. I feel like their tastes kind of align with mine. And sometimes they're off a little bit with stuff. They don't like, Mike likes his comedy a certain way and I'm kind of there with him a little bit. But, I also like very serious action. Yeah. And I think that's not really his thing. I don't think he finds that realistic, which is fine. There are just sometimes where I just like a good serious action movie piece. But I do think it's something that I'm interested in seeing.
Okay. All right. Now, since one of my main problems was the length and the pacing, how important is pacing and sometimes maybe even length or runtime to you when it comes to a movie?
I don't think I have a problem with doing 2 to 3 hour long movies, but like as long as I'm not aware that it's like a 2 hour movie. And I feel like a lot of that is like if the movie doesn't have like the long drawn out kind of cinematic pieces where they're trying to establish the depth of the location or the beauty of location, and you're just kind of staring at something, yeah, but nothing's really happening.
Yeah.
You know, someone that was really bad with that is like Wes Anderson. Mm-hmm. Now, when Wes Anderson really has a set piece that he just wants to gawk at and wants you to like marvel at his just set design and the miniature work and all that, he will just point the camera at that thing and gently rake it across the entire set so you get every little bit of detail, yeah, which sometimes works. Like in the Grand Budapest Hotel, I thought that was a lot of fun. In something like Steve Zissou, I felt like some of that was a little long and we could have cut a little bit of that down. The part that was important was Steve looking at that one painting. We didn't need to see him look at 8 different paintings. But yeah, as long as it's not like that, I should be okay.
Yeah, I find the older I get, the more I put emphasis on pacing. I feel like movies just need to do stuff at a right speed, and I'm not sure what that right speed is. It's the type of thing where it varies from movie to movie, and you know it when you feel it. Some movies are just, well, like a good example, the very first movie that you reviewed with us, part of the reason you're on this podcast is because we watched a movie together and we're like, would you want to review this? Was Black Adam. And my joke on that one was that it was that the first 2 hours were bad, and then there was another hour that was okay, but then the last 2 hours were terrible, implying it was 5 hours long, but it's really only like 2 to 2.5 hours long. That movie had bad pacing. I feel like I'm focusing on that more, and so Oppenheimer was just a bad example of it. And again, very well made quality-wise, but just... there was some stuff that could have been either cut out or condensed or sped up or something.
Do you feel like the story could have removed an entire plot line and been fine? Or do you think it should have just been the Manhattan Project? Like, is that the movie you wanted? The movie about the Manhattan Project?
It could have, because yes, there was some stuff in there about a trial afterwards. It's kind of like what you were talking about, the accusations of McCarthyism and working with the other side and stuff. That was stuff that, now I guess this is going to sound bad, maybe it'll make me sound stupid, but I'm not much of a history buff, so I admit I'm not an expert on Oppenheimer I wasn't going into it. So I didn't know what I was going to get or what was going to be involved, but I would say that whole trial stuff I care less about. And it's not that it wasn't important or that I couldn't have been interested. It's just that there were 2 main problems. Well, 3 main problems. The movie overall is too long, and so that was just another thing that increased the length. There was also non-linear storytelling, which made things kind of confusing, and so it kept jumping back and forth between the making of the bomb and the aftermath, and it that just made things kind of confusing. And then because there were slow bits and distractions and tangents along the way, it made it hard to keep up. And by the end of the movie, it also made all of that trial stuff kind of more important. And yes, I think what I wanted to focus on was more the moral, ethical issues of making the bomb, using the bomb, the aftermath of it. And those things were explored some. There were these moments where you can see psychological stuff going on in his head, and that was what I wanted more of. But the actual dropping of the bomb itself was very downplayed in the movie. You don't see it. You kind of hear about it. And so it takes place off screen. And so, and maybe that was intentional artistic choice, and maybe it should have been, since the movie really is about him and not the targets. But still, I guess, yeah, I kind of wanted a little bit more about what society was like and what took place with the bombing and the aftermath of it. But then when it steered in the trial stuff, I don't know, it wasn't, again, important to history, and maybe that's why it did need to be there. But as far as a movie and having to sit there through it, I wasn't into it as much. I rambled a little bit. Hopefully I answered your question.
No. You did. I think that was one of the interesting things about just how the movie was kind of laid out. It's just like, oh, we're going to talk about what happened after the bomb. The bomb's just kind of the fireworks show to get you in the door. Yeah. What we're really here to do is we're here to fundraise for the animal shelter so we can cure the kittens with their ingrown toenails and things like that. So you get you in the door with the nuclear explosion, and then you just get rocked with the trial and everything.
Yeah.
So Oppenheimer thumbs in the middle. Oppenheimer thumbs down.
Ooh, down. And I feel bad about that, because like I said, this is probably going to win an Academy Award, and I'm okay. Giving it a bad grade. I think the two grades I wrestled with were C- and D+. And I'm sure that there are some film buffs out there who probably feel like that is blasphemy either way. But the reason is, as a movie going experience, it just wasn't pleasant. I'm sorry. I don't care how historically accurate or inaccurate this movie was, and how much it may have been teaching a lesson, and how much it was look into somebody's mind and what it would be like to be that person and to do this huge thing that could be considered good, bad, or a mix of the two. It was hard sitting there for 3 hours. So the movie whacked me in the head, not in a good way. And so I'm sorry, I can't give a good grade to a movie that does that. And it'd be one thing if I felt like I learned something, but like I said, the moments where I could have, music was blaring and I couldn't hear stuff. So I can't give it a good grade.
So Oppenheimer thumbs down. And we learned a lot about Todd just then.
And since we don't want to do too much of that, let's break here. Stay tuned to part two of this, Todd and Preston Drive Time Chat, number 4, as the geeks talk about the Star Wars Ahsoka series, spooky season, and predictions about the geeks' upcoming ranking of MCU Phase 1 movies.